looks like that has happened, and you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Charles E. Chamberlain. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the state of Nebraska. I'm here on behalf of the state of Nebraska, which is an intervener appellant in this case. Today I'm going to focus my oral argument on the state's assignment of error that the district court erred in determining that the Browns met their burden to prove adverse possession. This would be a dispositive issue in the case, and we would ask that the court would remand with instructions to dismiss because of the failure to meet the burden. So this underlying action is a quiet title action involving the claim of adverse possession. That's an equity action. On appeal from an equity action, an appellate court decides factual questions de novo on the record and as to questions of both law and fact, is obligated to reach a conclusion independent of the trial court. The Browns had a burden to show that their adverse possession was actual, continuous, exclusive, notorious, and adverse for the statutory period of 10 years. And according to their complaint, that period began January 26, 2015, working backwards 10 years. The record shows that the evidence is missing to support these contentions. Specifically,
this property was adjoining property, right?
Mr. Brown owns property that adjoins the disputed property, yes.
And where was the fence?
The fence, there is a survey in evidence that indicates the exact position of the fence. The property in dispute consists of the northern portion of Section 6. The fence is located roughly along the northern boundary of Section 6. What happened in this case, the testimony indicates that Mr. Brown began his use of the disputed property under a lease, specifically an oral lease with Bud Jessup. That's a permissive use. So he began use of the disputed property by permission. At some point after that, Mr. Brown asserts that his use changed from permissive to adverse. The problem we have is there's no evidence of an overt act to put anyone on notice that his use had changed. But there
was he paying rent for the property?
I don't believe that there is in evidence how much rent he was paying, or if so, how much.
Well, that sure would be indication of whether it was adverse or not if he stopped paying the rent, but that wasn't a fact in the case.
Well, but Jessup is not the owner of record of the property. The owner of record of the property are family members, or at the time were family members, Alan Jessup and John Jessup, and then subsequently they were Jacobson Land and Cattle Company. Bud Jessup, if you look at the warranty deeds, they're found in Exhibits 6, 7, 8, and 11. Those are the warranty deeds that involve both halves of Section 6. You'll see that Bud Jessup owned by title the bottom three quarters of Section 6, and at the top approximately quarter was owned by Mary Jessup and then her sons Alan and John Jessup and later sold to Jacobson Land and Cattle Company. The disputed property in question is that 77 acres that constitutes basically the northern one quarter of Section 6.
Which at one time was owned by Jacob Cattle Company.
Yes, Jacobson Land and Cattle Company, absolutely. They bought it from John Jessup. There's an Exhibit 11, it's the warranty deed.
And that didn't happen until 2014?
That happened in 2014, that is accurate.
And there's paperwork that demonstrates that?
Exhibit 11, in the record, is the warranty deed from the Jessups to Jacobson Land and Cattle Company. What is missing from the evidence is any statement that this fence was used for anything but to keep out cattle. So you can use a property boundary to keep out cattle, but you can also use a fence in a neighborly and permissive way to run cattle on opposite sides of the fence. The district court didn't even make a factual conclusion that the fence was a boundary line, or that it had been considered a boundary line by individuals on both sides of the fence.
Who paid the taxes on this ground?
The taxes on this ground was paid by the John and Alan Jessup and Jacobson Land and Cattle Company subsequently. As part of the state's offer of proof, we entered in the tax records.
There's no evidence that the party claiming adverse possession ever paid the taxes on the property?
No, there's not. Additionally, Mr. Brown had opportunities to make comment concerning the ownership of the property. The state attempted to purchase the property as part of a larger purchase. And in doing so, the state has a requirement that it must hold public hearings and actually give people the opportunity to show up and tell the state why it is that it should not purchase this property. A public hearing was held in October, and a specific date here, it's in the record. In October of 2014, October 16th, 2014, Mr. Brown appeared himself, so he received notice, he actually appeared. The description of the property is read.
I beg your pardon, but his lease pens had been filed prior to that.
No, that is not accurate.
Okay, when was it filed?
So this is October 16th, 2014, mm-hmm. when there was a public hearing.
Oh, I beg your pardon, and it was filed in February of 15.
The lease pens was not filed until February 2015.
Thank you.
When was the lawsuit filed?
January 26, 2015. So prior to filing the lawsuit at a public hearing, Mr. Brown shows up and he offers testimony. And I'm going to read his exact words. It's transcribed and in the record in both Exhibit 4 and Exhibit 31, Attachment A.
Were those exhibits offered pursuant to an offer of proof?
Exhibit 31, Attachment A was offered pursuant to an offer of proof, yes, Your Honor. He said specifically, I am Terry Brown. I own the rest of Section 6, which is where this property is located. And then at trial, when Mr. Brown is offering testimony at trial, I turn to the record in his direct testimony, page 146, lines 11 through 21. He's asked concerning the ownership, what he owns and what the Jessups own. And on the record, he says that he owns 3/4 of Section 6, the south half, and that the other half was owned by Jessups and then Jacobson Land and Cattle Company.
So is that some kind of estoppel on his part? What is your argument there?
I think it goes towards showing in intent. In order to claim adverse possession, you have to show, one, that it's that your ownership, that your use was notorious and open, your claim was notorious and open. And two, you have to show that your intent in using the property was to claim ownership of it. Even at the hearing itself, he's standing up and he's not claiming ownership of it, although he asserts that he used it for several decades.
The evidence that you've just recited to us was part of an offer of proof. Did the court consider that in making its finding with respect to adverse possession?
So part of what I read, his testimony, it was not part of an offer of proof. That was part of direct examination. So there's no indication that that was not considered by the district court. I guess I'd just make a reminder that the factual conclusions in this case are de novo. There's no discretion owed the district court in that determination. Concerning the elements, including the testimony at the hearing from Exhibit 31, Attachment A, that was part of an offer of proof. I think the order in the record is clear that the court did not consider anything that was part of an offer of proof in making its determination.
You've assigned that as error. What's your best argument that it was error not to permit that evidence?
Not to permit the evidence, that the state had a sufficient interest to participate, that the evidence was relevant, and that the only reason we weren't allowed to present the evidence was an erroneous conclusion by the court that an intervener with a sufficient interest could be restricted from actually cross-examining witnesses and putting forth evidence.
And what was your interest?
Our interest involves the entering of an agreement to purchase the property and substantial hearings and public processes prior to the filing of the complaint, processes which the plaintiff took a knowing and active part in.
So this is an equitable interest?
Yes, it is an equitable interest.
Is this a written agreement?
There is a written agreement to sell. It's in the record. It was presented to the lower court. It's found in Exhibit 2.
What does Liz Pendens do to the rights of the parties? What is the purpose of Liz Pendens?
This court has found that there are two overriding purposes of a Liz Pendens statute. The first purpose, there was a procedural loophole where a plaintiff would file a complaint, and then prior to notice, the defendant would sell off the disputed property, thereby stopping the plaintiff from obtaining the relief sought. Secondly, there were unrecorded interest holders that weren't receiving notice of a pending action, and therefore they were not allowed to come in and have their rights adjudicated. The purpose of the Liz Pendens is to stop you from getting a right you don't already have, not to eliminate your ability to act on an interest already received. The state had already received an interest in this case.
That's the equitable interest in the property.
That's our contention, Your Honor.
Actually, had the state already paid for the property?
Prior to the signing of the list pendants, no.
No, but even after that?
Yes.
They continued and closed the deal?
They did close.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
There are no further questions. We would ask that you remand the case with instructions to dismiss. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Snyder, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Andrew Snyder. I'm here from Scottsbluff, Nebraska. I'd like to introduce you to my client, Terry Brown, is sitting back here with his wife, Charlene. We're here to ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. I think the state started this today a little backwards, jumping to the actual adverse possession question without addressing
procedurally, why wasn't the state a proper party to the action for adverse possession?
Why weren't they allowed to present evidence?
Right.
Because they were subject to the lease pendants.
Well, what does the lease pendants do? That doesn't prevent people from that have an interest in the property from joining in the action, does it?
It prevents anybody who gains an interest after the lease pendants from gaining any substantive rights, which is what the state did. They didn't close on this property until well after actual and constructive notice of the lease pendants.
Would the state have an interest to protect against a claim of adverse possession?
No, not after the lease pendants. They don't acquire any substantive rights. That's the purpose of the lease pendants.
How does the lease pendants wipe out an equitable interest?
They didn't prove an equitable interest. We don't know that they had one.
The contract
were they permitted
didn't come
to
into
prove? I'm sorry. I beg your pardon.
Do what?
Were they allowed to prove anything?
Well, they didn't plead it. They
didn't
never
plead
asked.
What?
They never pled an equitable interest.
Their answer includes an allegation that they received equitable title by virtue of the purchase agreement.
I'm sorry, I must have missed that, but they didn't ask for any hearing on it. The only time they offered any.
Do they have to ask for a hearing if the matter is tried to the court?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be the opportunity to offer the evidence?
No. We had a motion for summary judgment on this issue.
That was your motion for summary judgment.
It was their opportunity to oppose that motion for summary judgment, and they didn't. They didn't prove an equitable interest.
Did the state's answer include affirmative defenses?
It included affirmative defenses that were more properly Jacobson's defenses.
Did some of those affirmative defenses go to the lease pendants?
I don't recall without looking at it. I don't think so. I think
if they did, would
the
state be
adverse possession?
If some of those affirmative defenses did go specifically to the lease pendants, would the state have an opportunity at trial to offer evidence in support of those affirmative defenses?
Not after the court granted summary judgment in our favor. They still got a burden to prove their stuff. If I move for summary judgment and they don't set forth what their interest is and what that interest gives them as far as rights, then they're out.
Did the summary judgment resolve all issues in the case?
No, it resolved the state's interest. It resolved the lease pendants that it was filed. It was filed before their purchase of the property, that it was done correctly. The state had notice, both actual and constructive of it, and determined they had no interest in it because the state didn't bother to prove anything that amounted to a material fact. And they haven't assigned that as an error, I don't believe.
Haven't assigned what as an error?
The court's summary judgment. What they've assigned as error is saying, well, we should be able to assert our equitable title. They just never did it. There's not anything in the record. You look at your cases on equitable title, they require a consummated purchase agreement. Not there.
I'm sorry, they had a written contract and that was entered before you filed any activity that, or you filed a notice that there was an action pending. That's what that is. That gives notice to the people, and then that preserves the status quo until the rights of the parties are determined.
Correct.
And the state had signed a written contract for the purchase.
No.
No?
There's no evidence of that.
Okay.
There's no evidence at all. You won't find a signed purchase agreement by both parties, a consummated purchase agreement like your prior cases have been held.
There appears to be some document there. What is the document?
An offer of sale isn't a consummated purchase.
Doesn't mean that it was accepted.
No, it's not accepted.
And then what the state, and then what the state did after the notice of the action pending could not bootstrap the state's rights to a greater right than they had by buying the property.
Right.
But isn't the fact that the state, did the state ever claim any interest, equitable interest in the property prior to the summary judgment?
I'm going to defer to Judge Stacy there, but my recollection is no, that they didn't assert any equitable interest in the amended answer to the complaint. They didn't assert it at the hearing on the motion for summary judgment, and they didn't even assert it in their motion for reconsideration of the summary judgment. It wasn't asserted until this appeal.
Whatever was asserted was not packaged as some kind of counterclaim or something of that nature, but merely as a defense. Is that correct?
There was no counterclaim. That's correct. There were only defenses.
I'm kind of drafting after Justice Stacy's recollection of the answer.
What was the evidence then that you adversely possessed the property?
There was a fence. The testimony was constructed as a boundary fence between family members. Mm-hmm. Time. I think it was Mary Jessup on one side, you had Bud or Stanley Jessup on the south side of that fence. And of course, those family members operated as family members, and I believe there's even case law that says if there's family members, you can presume it's permissive. During some part of that time, Mr. Brown leased that property from Stanley Jessup.
What's the significance of that?
Just as the only significance I would attribute to the adverse possession part is his knowledge of the property, his knowledge of the fence, that sort of thing.
Well,
I don't think him leasing it from somebody who was using it permissively gives us anything. So, but in 92, he bought the property.
Counsel, if you lease property, that's not a permissive use?
My client didn't lease the property from people that he's claiming adverse possession from. My client leased the property from Stanley Jessup.
The predecessors.
So the history being initially it was permissive and then what, it became adverse prior?
No, it was never permissive for my client.
Okay.
Stanley Jessup owned the south side, Mary Jessup owned the north side. Obviously, I think that was permissive, their family members.
Okay.
Okay. But when my client buys the property, it's not permissive.
He's
a different entity. He's not family. Fence, his testimony, and we had another gentleman of years that remembers that fence, was that it was constructed as a boundary fence. And so during the time frame, or after Mr. Brown bought the property, he used that property for running cattle, for hunting. He leased it out to other people. He maintained the fence for nearly 24 years up until we filed this action. So that's our evidence of adverse possession.
What's your response to the state's argument that your client appeared at public hearings, talked about the land he owned, never included this parcel, this 80 acres, in the land that he owned?
Well, a couple of things. First, I don't think any layperson going to go somewhere and say, I own property that he doesn't own. I mean, that's what the adverse possession action is, to establish whether he owns it or not. Second, if you're to adopt the state's reasoning on that Mr. Brown knew that the state was interested in purchasing this property, therefore he can't file a lease pendants, kind of defeats the purpose of the whole statute and common law scheme. And that's the purpose of the lease pendants, is to assert your interest as against prospective buyers.
Who paid the taxes on the property?
I don't know. It wasn't in evidence. Okay. Are there any other questions that I can help
So you're with? You're claiming title by deed, or you claim that your client purchased the property? You're talking about the other party buying the property.
No. And the the 77 acres that were disputed were not owned by Stanley Jessup. They were owned by Mary Jessup. Stanley Jessup didn't buy them. My client didn't buy them. My client adversely possessed them.
By virtue of the fence?
Fence and his use of the land.
And use.
Anything else? Thank you. We'd ask you to affirm the decision.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is In Re Estate of Volman.